next speaker is Dr. Tom DiLorenzo, who is a professor of psychology and chair of that department at the University of Delaware. Dr. DiLorenzo will speak on the transformation of classrooms into e-learning spaces, the important link between technology and learning.
Thank you, Tom, and can everyone hear me all right? Great. I appreciate being here. This has been informative. I always find it fun to talk about the technology and learning. I was trying to think of how I might introduce myself this morning, and I thought that I'm an academic, but I'm an academic who had the first Pong game on the block. And for those of you who are under 50, you probably don't know, what a Pong game is. The first generation, I think it was the first generation video game. It was really a very cool game. Another way to describe myself would be that I'm not an instructional technology specialist, but I play one at the office. I love and I'm fascinated by it. And let's see if I can do it. There. The main thing that I would like to leave with you today is technology in the service of what? The problem that I often see with academics is either they are afraid of technology or they jump in and use technology without thinking about why they're using it. And then it doesn't seem to work and then they say, well, I'm not going to use it anymore. So we need to ask the question, technology in the service of what? Next slide. I'll try and remember to say press next slide. This was sort of like having feedback, you know, and you have to deal with it. About a year ago, in the local newspaper, the News Journal, there was an article about the use of technology in the classroom. And the title went something like, "Don't feel like going to class? No problem. Watch it later online. Technology spurs student absenteeism." The instructor was demoralized. The whole article was about feeling powerless. These students, I do all of this stuff for my students, and then they don't come to class. And as I read this, I thought, I don't really know why he's demoralized. What he has done is created a distance learning class. He's actually created a course where the students do not need to come. Everything was on the web. Everything. All of his notes were on the web. His lectures were on the web. There was no reason for the students to come. But he was demoralized because he embraced this technology and thought this was the greatest thing, and then they didn't come. Next slide. I love this quote, technology in the service of learning. It's from the manager of our IT user services at the University of Delaware. Our goal is to enable University of Delaware faculty to enhance student learning through the use of technology. Now, Janet's in the IT office, but no matter what you bring to her about technology, the first question she asks is, how is this going to enhance learning? How is this going to impact the learning process? And so we've developed wonderful partnerships between faculty members and the IT staff. It started a number of years ago when I decided I wanted to put some information on WebCT, and I'm not sure which course management system you use here, Blackboard.
We use them all.
We use them all, okay. This is the State Research University. And so I was developing WebCT, and it was a little overwhelming at the time, and I called the IT office, and they said, we'll help you. Come sit down, and we'll do it with you. And it was an amazing partnership. I was able to sit with someone, get through the whole thing, but at the same time, she would never do it for me. So I sat there, and I'd say, I want to do this, and she'd say, okay, do it yourself. And I thought, wow, she's just like a psychologist. She's making me do it myself. Wow. So I learned it, and then I thought, well, what's the next step? I couldn't get the faculty over to the IT office, and so I said to them, will you come over to the department and actually do these presentations? And they said, sure, as long as there's 6, 8, 10 faculty members, we'll do that. It was easy to do if they came over, and it was a way for me to get my faculty to start using course management technology. Then the next step was, where should we be going? What should we be doing? And someone from the IT office came over and actually did a needs analysis for us. And I think the critical thing that happened, and this, and I've used this multiple times, is that the person, the consultant, actually met with every faculty member, either individually in a small group, and said, what is it that you do? What would you like to do? And put together, next slide, put together a document. It was about 20 pages, single space, and it went through areas of staff development, course design, website enhancements, virtual site labs. I didn't even have an idea that many of the faculty members were interested in virtual site labs. But this interaction with someone from IT brought up a number of points. She went over the current situation in the department and recommendations for every category. She talked about a departmental repository, what were software, hardware requests, all kinds of things that were enormously helpful. Next slide. This is the slide that says three initiatives on the top to make sure that we're all on the same wavelength. So out of this document, we decided along the way that we would adopt three initiatives. And one is a personal response system, which some of you, maybe many of you use, we often use the word clickers, Symposium technology, and the Ultimate Classroom. And I'd like to go over each one of these. Personal response systems, again, maybe most or all of you know what those are. Those are handheld clickers. They look a little bit like a remote control device that you use for a TV. And on these clickers, it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or it has A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. Or now, clickers, you can actually use alphanumeric characters. You can use all kinds of responses to get information. And so students will buy these clickers, and in class, you use them in various ways. And many of the faculty members that I've worked with are befuddled. They have no idea what to do with this thing. And so they just sort of jump in and do it, and it doesn't really work. And so you really need to think, in the service of what? So how would you set up something like this? So a number of years ago, I decided that I wanted the students to read before class. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that something we all wish they would do? And so I thought, is there a way that I can use this technology to increase or enhance the probability that they will read before class? And so what I did is I set it up so that there were 5 multiple choice questions at the beginning of 12 different class periods. I randomly selected these 12 class periods. They didn't know when they would occur. I would present items over the readings due for that day. So if they did the reading, they should be able to answer these questions. And the total possible extra points that I gave was equal to about 9% of the total grade. Again, the reason I mention this is that I thought through, how would this work? Should I give credit? Should I not give credit? Should it be extra credit? Should it be this? Should it be that? How much of the grade should it account for? Now, the students answered every single question correct over this period of time. They could have gotten 9% extra credit. No one ever made that many. I think the highest that anyone made was 5%, and I could live with that. Next slide. We actually did some research looking at this. And so we had, in another semester, 4 large introductory psychology classes. 2 used clickers, and 2 did not use clickers in the class. And we asked a variety of questions. For example, how often did you read before class? We found that the clicker classes rated the items significantly higher than the non-clicker classes. And so they were reporting reading more before class. That was great. How about did they do any better on the exams? Well, we analyzed that as well. We found that, at least in my class, 3 out of the 4 exams in the clicker class, they did better than the ones in the non-clicker class. And the one exam that wasn't better, it was the same. So I felt, next slide. So I used clickers at the beginning of class. I found that students read more. It led to better discussions, active learning, conceptual thinking, and the outcome was higher grades. And interestingly enough, we're publishing this article as well. And I would encourage all of you to not only think about the link between technology and learning, but do a little research, collect a little data, and publish it. And so for the rest of us academics, we can learn from that. Next slide. The next step is knowing that learning comes about more quickly as we increase time on task. And so last semester, there's another feature about clickers. It's actually using clickers in homework assignments. And so what the students do is they answer homework questions over the readings, and then they bring that, their clickers, to the class. The information is saved in the clicker, and at the beginning of class, I can actually pull it up. At the same time, I gave the students a few essay questions to answer, short answer essay questions. I delivered it through WebCT, and they needed to get this information to me 24 hours ahead. Now, presumably, they gave it to me 24 hours ahead so that I could prep for the next class, and I certainly did that. But again, it forced them to do reading and give me the information before they came to class. The benefit, it did indeed increase time on task. It actually had them not only doing the readings ahead of time, but also I said that they could work together. I encouraged them to work together. One of my colleagues doesn't want to use it anymore because they're cheating. I just turned it around and said, I want you to work together. It's a wonderful thing to work together. It increases time on task out there, not in my classroom, but out there. And the other thing I found out is that it gave me firsthand information about what they were thinking that I never before had. How many times are you in class and you say, any questions? There are no questions. And what do we assume? We assume that they don't have any questions because they understand it. And we move on to the next topic. That's typically what I would do. I'd say, any questions? No questions? Great. Let's move on to something else. Well, what this allowed me to do was actually find patterns, cognitive patterns, that were mistakes. I would find when they answered these clicker questions and or the essay questions online, that there were groups of students who fundamentally did not understand the information. And then I could prepare for class time to address those fundamental errors. An area in psychology is looking at cognitive errors as a way to determine what people are actually thinking. So if we can get some data on what are those cognitive errors, we can make those presentations in class. So the feedback was incredibly helpful. To find out what students understand and do not understand is very helpful. For those of you who don't use clickers, students will in class answer questions, and their answers are immediately displayed on the screen in some sort of a chart. And so I can see whether 90% of them have it correct, 50% of them have it correct, whatever. And then I can also, if I choose, to save the data and grade it, it's immediately downloaded into my grades program. Another case, this wasn't the course that I taught, but another colleague taught human sexuality. No credit for clicker use, and there was total anonymity. She fought through it, and what she was interested in was discussion. She was interested in having the students fully understand that these issues about sexuality are not just textbooks. They're occurring here. These are our columns, but we can't tell who said what, and so they were anonymous. Students love them. So when they rated on a question, I think clickers are a valuable asset to this class on a scale from 1 to 5, with 5 being strongly agreed, score is 4.58. And we also found in students in the question, I think the clicker should be used again in this class, 4.74 on a 5-point scale. And students like it, and they actually seem to be learning from it as well. Within 1 year of us starting to use these personal response systems, if you remember years ago, Batman had the bat belt, and you got all these little pockets on it. I love that too, so that's all the technology. So we needed these belts so they could carry 4 or 5 clickers at the same time, because there's different companies that have these clickers. And so we very quickly realized that we needed to standardize. We needed to come up with one clicker system, one personal response system for the campus. We put together a faculty IT staff committee. We met within a course of a semester. It was the most efficient committee I've ever been on. We invited 4 companies to come to campus. Presentations, questions, and answer sessions were held. And we very quickly came up with what we were going to use. This was the form that we used for each PRS vendor. We asked questions about clicker, the size, the functionality, how about the receivers, what was the business model. And again, through these meetings, we very quickly were able to pick one system that worked for us. Fairly easy. The cost for this system we chose was relatively cheap for the students. Faculty readily accepted the decision, and there's lots of excitement on campus. And the numbers have grown exponentially in the number of faculty members who are using the system now. First semester, it was me, and then within 4 or 5 semesters, we have 150, 160 faculty members now using it. Second point I want to talk about in terms of the e-classrooms is the use of Symposium. I'm not sure how many of you know about smart board technology, and I won't go over it much, but this is where you have an interactive whiteboard and you can press on the board and you can do all kinds of fancy stuff. But what do you do for a large classroom? And now we have the technology to use this smart board, interactive whiteboards in a larger classroom. So we put this Symposium, and I'll show you a picture of it in a second. It's in a classroom with 300 desks. There's an interactive pen display, so the pen is used on this tablet. It's connected to a computer and a projector, and you can write directly on the screen in digital ink. It saves your notes, so if by chance you want to save your notes, and then send them out to the students, you can do that. You can access any website. You can project on this large screen, and you can use Word and PowerPoint and virtually anything that's standard. But you can also use applications that aren't standard. We're using an application called Fathom right now, which is a stats package. The computer in the podium is also linked to the psychology department server, so network folders are available to individuals who log in. I now bring nothing to class, nothing. It's all there in the Symposium, and it's like the coolest thing that you've ever done, really. So let me give you a little bit of an example of what this looks like. This is a classroom that has 300 desks, and at the front you can see that's the about a 60-foot screen, and I want you to look over here on the sort of middle bottom right. There's the podium right there. I'll give you another view of it right there. This is the podium, and one more right there, and you can see a little bit of a projection up there. Okay, now I'm going to, not high tech, but I'm going to walk behind the podium right here, and this is what you see. And this is very standard for many classrooms. This is where you take care of the screen coming down, the lights, all that kind of stuff. And this is where the Symposium sits. And actually getting the carpenters to build this thing costs almost as much as the technology. This is the tablet right there, and that's what it looks like when you're looking down at it. And so through this symposium, I can do all kinds of things. I can write, I can move to websites, I can bring up information that I have on the server, I can save information, and it's all saved locally. If I use the clickers and I download the data for the student's grades, it's all local. Some of the clicker companies, they save the data across the website, and that was one thing we didn't want to have happen. This is all saved locally. The third I want to mention is what someone dubbed the ultimate classroom. I didn't call it this, but someone else called it this. Many things develop in ways that we never really knew that they would. About a little over a year ago, two of my faculty members attended workshops in the summer. One was on technology and the other one was on problem-based learning. And you probably know what problem-based learning is. That's where students sit around tables like this and literally solve problems during the course of class. And they were attending these two things, and they said, could we put these together? Could we put problem-based learning and technology together in some way? And so we just started talking through it. We included our department IT person in our discussions. We included someone from the media services unit, and we were talking through, how would we set this up? How would we do problem-based learning with technology? And so we started talking a little bit about computers on the table. Maybe we need computers on the table. But then what do we do with the wires? How are we going to run these wires? Well, that's not going to work. How about if we use laptops? Maybe we could use laptops. Well, the battery life of laptops is a problem. As a matter of fact, we have many problem-based learning classrooms. A few have laptops, and they're never used. Because after the first class, if the battery was recharged, it's now dead. And so everyone else the rest of the day can't use it. So that wasn't going to work, so we talked about it and tried to figure out what we were going to do. The typical problem-based learning class has these tables. Ideally, there are five chairs, so there's five students working on them. A problem is presented, and the students work together to solve the problem. If you have the good fortune of having a computer in the room, then they can use the computer to solve the problems. So they can go out to the website, or they can go to any database that you give them, and they solve the problem. This new problem-based classroom that we came up with has projection capabilities. We actually have 11 projectors in a room for 45 students, and I'll show you a picture of that in a second. The really, really cool thing about this, and I've talked to individuals at Siemens and Verizon Wireless and other organizations, this is the wave of the future. This is what they do now. They want people to work together to solve problems, but they want everyone to be looking at the same stuff. So if you have a computer on a table, there's only one person who's able to see the screen. And often, everyone else is doing something else. We wanted to come up with a system where they would all be looking at the same thing. And so this is what we came up with. This is our classroom. This room had 40, 50 regular hardwood desks in it before we started. We put in these tables, and you can see on each table there's a wireless keyboard. There are projectors in the ceiling. There are 11 projectors in this room. I'm going to turn a little bit to the right here. This is looking at the front of the room. There's a smart board on the front of the room, on the wall in the front of the room. Here's the smart board on the left-hand side. For those people who don't want to use the technology, they can still use markers. This is just a whiteboard over there. And so that's the front of the room. But you know the problem when you're dealing with a smart board and tables is that those who are on the wrong side of the table, they have to keep turning around. They don't have anything to write on. So we put a projector on the other side, and it projects the smart board. So no matter where you're sitting in the room, you don't have to turn around to look at the smart board if the faculty member is presenting something there. But what has happened is that the faculty members in these rooms don't lecture anymore. Let's face it, quite frankly, lectures are stupid anyhow. I mean, I know I offend many of you. You're only transferring information in the lecture. That's all you're doing. You're only transferring information, and it's a pretty ineffective way to transfer information. If that's all we're doing, then what's all this bricks and mortar about? We've got to get beyond that. We have to think about how students learn and apply this technology to that learning environment. These individuals who are using it, they don't lecture anymore. Students come in and solve problems. They work together to solve problems. That's what learning is all about, quite frankly, working together to solve problems. If you saw this, you wouldn't believe it. Students get there early. As soon as they're there, they start working. There's this roar in the room because people are talking. If you can't handle that, then this isn't for you. But they're working constantly. We have to kick them out of the room for the next class that comes in. They love it. They're solving problems at these tables. And this looks the same, except I took put up the screen. So for the nine tables, there's nine tables. For the three on the one side, they project on one wall. The three on the other side, they project on the other wall. And then in a problem-based discussion, we said, well, what are we going to do with the three in the middle? And we came up with screens. So we put these screens down, and they project there. So students are projecting, and they're working on the laptops. And just one more, that's one table. So you see the table, there's five chairs, there's the wireless keyboard, there's the projector on top, and there's the projection screen right there. How much was it? Probably the bottom line, people are thinking, well, what did this thing cost? It really wasn't that expensive. Now, if you're just looking at the technology, not the tables themselves, the LCD projector, there's a thin client system, wireless keyboards, this whole thing, the whole thing cost $30,000, which in my mind is nothing. I mean, really, when you come down to this type of technology and a problem-based learning, $30,000 was not much. The use of the room is now booked out all the time. We started with measurement statistics. We have research methods in there, sensation and perception. Other departments want to use it right now. We've had tours almost constantly from other universities to come and actually see this. And I can tell you the buzz among the faculty who don't use it, but have students who have been through it are now saying, wow, I raise an issue about X, Y, or Z, and they know it. They know it. Because they've worked the material. They've worked it. They know it much better than ever before. So I'd encourage you to think about transformation of classrooms for as e-learning spaces. Ask yourself technology in the service of what? We want to make sure that there's some learning going on here somewhere. And we should. Our goal should be to enhance student learning through the use of technology. Questions?
Okay, Cannon does have a question. Can you hear me?
Camden?
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. What question do you have, Camden?
Your classroom space that you were showing on the last slide, the tables were round. Did you look at semicircle tables?
We did not look at semicircle tables, and the reason why, and they may be wonderful as well, we went to problem-solving experts and said, how actually should we set this up? They even gave us the dimensions of the table and said there's got to be no more than five chairs around this table. And so we took their advice, but I think semicircle tables might work very well for certain types of classes.
Okay, thank you.
My question has to do with how you alter your classroom presentation based on the information you get back from the students in between classes?
That's a great question. I've now morphed multiple times. I don't use PowerPoint anymore. I don't lecture anymore. And so I use information that I get from the students either over the web, which tells me whether they understand the information or not. I use clicker questions throughout the class to understand whether they understand the material or not. And then even in classes of 100, 200, 300, I basically do problem-based learning. And so it's a constant discussion format. It's a constant, what are the issues? Break up, spend 5 minutes talking to each other, bring the information back, then we move on to the next topic. So it doesn't look like a lecture anymore. I know there's questions here, but should we, I don't know.
One question from Newark.
Okay, Newark.
Could you tell us what projector you purchased and what was the cost of one of those projectors?
That's a great question. I'm not an instructional technology specialist. I only play one. I would gladly get the information to you. I think it's about $1,000 a projector. But is that right? It's about $1,000 a projector.
Thank you.
Other than the psychology department, which other disciplines have been using the problem-based learning setup? I think it's been wonderful for languages, and I'm very interested if there are other disciplines.
I thought you were going to ask a different question, but the question was, what other disciplines use problem-based learning? I'm not the expert on problem-based learning, but at the University of Delaware, it's been used for about the last 15 years and literally infused in many, many disciplines. It started in physics. I used problem-based learning at a medical school years ago. It's really where the root of it was. But it's now used in multiple disciplines at the university. I thought you were going to say, who else uses this classroom? And that's rather controversial. And I'll look at Mike here, because at our university, we don't put computers in classrooms. It's the model where you bring your computer with you, okay? So when we developed this technology, I got the grant for it. And so we lock it away when we don't use the room. And not only because we're afraid other people will break it, but the administration makes us do it. Because if people use it and really like it, they're going to say, we want this everywhere. So I thought that's where you were going to go. We do let people in who we train to use in this room. We'll start here.
Yeah, I just wonder, after all your instructing, embracing the technology, how do you train or influence them in different methods and their role changing in the classroom?
Faculty members. How do we influence faculty members in their role changing? That's another very good question. For those of you who use problem-based learning, you know that the current crop of students do not like it. Why? Because they have to work. Honestly, they have to work. I have students who come to class and they want me to talk at them for an hour. This requires them to work together. I can't tell you the number of students who say, I don't want to work with these groups of people. I don't want to do this. Many times the evaluations are, this faculty member doesn't teach anymore. I hear this across the country in problem-based learning. This faculty member doesn't teach anymore. What they're really saying is this person doesn't stand up in the front of the class and say a bunch of things to us anymore. So we have to re-educate people to look at what kinds of evaluations they might expect and also re-educate administrators on what kinds of information they're going to get back from the evaluations. And it takes us one step further. It's more than just student evaluations. It's really how well are they doing in the next class. how well are they doing in the class after that? And so there is a reorientation to how you're going to use the information, and a reorientation to the faculty and saying, it's okay, this is different, this is hard. Many faculty members feel total loss of control. It is, because they, their students are out there doing stuff. It just feels better to stand up here and just do things irrespective of what they want. And so you really do have to warn the faculty member ahead of time, this is what's going to happen. There was a question right there for a while.
Yes, I wonder if you could say a little more about clickerism. I don't know anything about it except what I hear from physics professors. I'm a literature professor. I use feedback in my classes all the time, almost every day. It sounds like a better way to go, but I'm wondering if it's verbal enough.
It might or might not be a better way to go. If you use now, if you have a size of class and you use other ways of getting feedback and you feel like it's a good overview of what they understand overall, then maybe what you're doing is fine. What this allows is for you to get data on everyone. And so now you know that 75% of them got it wrong. And before, you only knew from the one or two or three of the 25% who answered it right. And so you can use clickers in whatever form. It really comes down to how do you want to get feedback, or what kind of feedback do you want? And then you can program clickers in multiple ways to get you that information. And please know, this doesn't take a lot of time. So many faculty members are worried, this is going to take up all my time. A clicker question for me lasts about 1 minute.
Some examples?
Sure. So I might say something like the clinical faculty in this department are interested in empirically supported treatments. That means A, B, C, D. And so I can do it, I can have the question prepared ahead of time, or I can ask it immediately. They present their information, A, B, C, D, and it immediately comes up, and I find out that 25% got it wrong. That tells me that I have to spend a little bit of time right now going over that, or giving them the tools to understand what that is. Thank you.
Tom will be here the rest of the day and be available for further questions, and we can also link up with Newark and Camden if there are additional questions for Tom or any of the speakers. Thanks very much, Tom.